Good evening.
Good evening, it's Ruby.
How are you?
I'm better, getting better every day.
Hello.
What about you?
Baruch Hashem, I'm well, thank you. Good evening.
Hello.
I'm going to mute my phone.
Okay. We'll start in about a half a minute. We're starting with the verse 107. And that's section 14 of Parashat Noach from the Zohar. We'll start with the L'shem Yechud. L'shem Yechud could Shabarichu Ishkin David, Hiluur, Himud, Hiluud, Hiluur. L'shem Yud He Bavadhe, Yehuda, Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, La Sok Torah Mitzvah. Vayehino am Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maasei yadeinu kunanei aleinu maasei yadeinu kunaneihu. Kegavna da letata kad sha'ar amin itbarkun kolom inun mitzaskin be'achav sanat hulach tfon Vilachavo at yam leitar arva mechadaihu b'di Yisrael ulam da ulak ach santehom ugin kach Yisrael inun mish mashkin bir kan lekol inun. Imanan begin to eat askun. Behulachon vila eat arvun. Behadaihu. The same applies below in this world. When all the other nations are blessed, they all become occupied with their portion and do not meddle with Israel or covet their portion. Just as we described previously, the serpent with the female principal and the 70 supernal ministers with Israel, so is the case with the 70 nations and Israel below. This is why during Sukkot, when they offer the 70 bulls as a sacrifice, Israel draw blessings down to all the supernal ministers of the 70 nations, so they will be occupied with their portion and not meddle with Israel. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Is it just me to talk?
No, Ruby's okay. On as well. There's two of you.
Okay. Well, I think what
Ruby,
it's...
Ruby, mute your phone.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I was just finishing. Ruby mutes her phone, so she does ask questions from time to time and makes
okay.
comments from time to time. But normally she's just listening because of the muting.
Okay, well, yesterday we learned that Rosh Kodesh and Yom Kippur, the scapegoat, keeps the Satan busy. And then when Sukkot comes around, the offering of the 70 bulls does pretty much the same thing. It brings peace to Israel because they're tied to that 70 bulls sacrifice, And when Israel does what it's supposed to, its enemies are the other nations anyway, if we want to call them enemies at times, are at peace with them. That's what I see.
And that is what is being said, and that is correct. I'll just ask one question. Why doesn't the Zohar use the word anti-Semitism? It would be much more clear in our generation if we said that they were at peace rather than, or we said that the sacrifice of the bulls, welcome, Malcolm, the sacrifice of the bulls would create, you know, is a form of, it eliminates anti-Semitism in the world, which is what the modern Kabbalists teach us. So I'm just asking this question for the purposes of expanding the way people look at how what the Zohar is written and what is it actually teaching. And it's a rhetorical question. If you don't want to venture an answer, that's fine.
Well, I'm not sure.
Well, it's really a very simple answer, but that's the reason I asked it, because people tend to not think in these terms. The reason that anti-Semitism isn't used by the Zohar is, even if we say the Zohar was written 1,000 years ago, the word anti-Semitism did not come into the English language, let alone other languages, until the 1800s. Now, it is true the Zohar, through its Ruach HaKodesh and through the essence of the connection to the unification of Hashem, the Zohar would know that the word anti-Semitism would come into usage, and so it could have said that. But the reality is, no one else who would know what word was going to be used. I don't know the word for anti-Semitism in Hebrew or Aramaic. But if I were to, if the Zohar used that modern term, no one would have understood the word.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's not used. And the only reason I'm asking that and then giving this explanation is for to say to people, as you read the Zohar, don't just look at the spiritual concepts. Look at the physical and how they interrelate to what's being said. Use all of your faculties, all of your wisdom, all of your knowledge, which includes the history of the Jewish people.
Hanak, may I ask a question?
Of course, please.
You said anti-Semite, but Semite doesn't come from the word, originates from Shem, that son of Noah.
Yes, that is cool. That's correct.
So wouldn't that be like if you were looking at making the comparison between Israel and then Shem being our just one tribe again?
Well, Shem is not one tribe. Shem had more than one child. He had one that he studied with, that he opened up the yeshiva in Jerusalem back at the time of Jacob and before Jacob. So it was called the Yeshiva of Shem and Ever. And there's this discussion that Ever became Malki Tzedek, and that the priesthood of the world, the Kohen Gadol of the world, was transferred from Ever to Abraham when he went into the land and started to walk around the land. But keep in mind, you're using the word Semitism, And I answered, yes, its root is coming from Shem, but that's really its root. That's a modern root. It's a modern discussion. The word Semitism wasn't being used before maybe 1500, 1400. And the reason that the word in the 1800s was coined as anti-Semitism, because that's the way Jews were referred to intellectually. The Semites were all of the Arabs. The Semites were all of the Jews. The Semites were all of the children of Israel. And that was the usage of the intellectual in Europe and Western Europe as it went through that process. Come in. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Thank you. So you can't really say that Semitism and anti-Semitism are words that were in Hebrew or they were in Aramaic in usage, because Hebrew wasn't being used in the 1500s. It was being used by the Jews in their study of the Torah, but it was considered a dead language. People did not use it in their lives. And the same thing with Aramaic. It's considered a dead language today. And yet there is a people, the Armenians, a certain segment of the Armenians use Aramaic today. But the dialect of Aramaic that was used in temple times is not what is used in Aramaic by the Armenians today. And the Armenians they've been thrown out of their lands, and not all of their lands, but it was all part of the Turkish assault on the Armenians, if you studied any of that history. So the point that I was making with this, I was trying to point out that people look at what the Zohar says in an English translation, and even if you were reading it in Hebrew, and you cannot divorce yourself from your normal knowledge. You've studied history. You have some understanding of what took place. Now, you're not an expert in history. You're not an expert in even Jewish history, but you've learned some of it, and you need to use all of the knowledge you have in whatever area in order to fully appreciate and understand the Zohar. And a lot of people, most students of Kabbalah don't realize that.
May I ask one other question before we read this paragraph? So the 70 nations,
yes,
were they like a seed from Ham and Japheth? When it speaks of the 70 nations.
No, some of the 70 nations come from Shem as well. The 70 nations descend from Ham, Shem, Ham, and what's his name?
Yeah.
The third one is
Japheth.
Japheth. Yeah, no, but all the 70 nations come from all three. There's in the art scroll Siddur. Not Siddur, in the art scroll Tanakh, they have
Did we get disconnected?
I think so.
I think we did.
Yeah, he'll be back.
a couple of days ago, he wasn't aware that he was cut off until I sent a text.
Okay.
I have returned and the call dropped. I'm sorry. So I did. I believe I answered your question, but I'm not sure if you heard my last few words.
You said something about looking in the stock. Yeah, we heard it.
Okay.
Well, no, I don't think you finished. She just said, according to the art scroll, to knock. That's all I heard.
Okay.
Okay. So according to the art scroll, to knock, at the back of it, in an appendix, they have a chart of the 70 nations and the genealogy of the 70 nations. And essentially, they name it by the names of the people. And I, you know, if I ever have time, I started in one of the things that I started, I started to look at those names and what those, the meaning of those names were, and the positive and negative attributes of each nation. But I never completed it. But if you take a look at that chart, it shows who married who, how the 70 nations grew, the children of the various people as it descended from the three sons of Noah. But one of the most interesting one is the nation of Amalek, because Amalek is descended from, I'm trying to remember to be exact, but forgive me for not being exact, but essentially his mother was not... His father was not married to his mother because she was married to another one of their relatives. And the Midrash comes and explains that she wanted to be connected to Jacob, but because he rejected her, she then went over to Esau and married one of his children. But when she had Amalek, it was from a relationship, not with her husband, which makes Amalek a mamzer, which is a child of a wedded woman who is intimate with someone not her husband. It's
That's
a very narrow definition of the word bastard in English. And over the centuries, the word bastard got expanded to mean, you know, anybody born out of a wedlock. But that's not the Jewish understanding. But it's interesting, if you look at that chart, to see how who married whom and how they interrelate. And then if we analyze the names of the people, we get to get an understanding of the attributes of the nations. Should I continue, or is there any more questions?
Well, I'm wondering if there's not a hint, too, that since we don't have the sacrifices today, that's important for each one of us to read those verses. You know, they're on our calendar every year at Sukkot that have to do with the sacrifices.
I'm embarrassed, Hannah. Excuse me, but I'm embarrassed because I teach that. I stress it, that you need to hear a Torah reading every day during Sukkot. Mm-hmm. And the Torah reading you hear is the sacrifices of the bulls. And I always stress that if by listening to the Torah readings, you're reducing anti-Semitism. So I'm embarrassed because I'm not getting that across to people.
Well, I do
so
that.
Got to do better next year.
That's why I'm bringing it out, because to me, it's a hint there it's on our calendars, and of course you teach it, but
yes.
And
but
see,
it
with
doesn't
us,
mean that people
have services. You know, we don't have services in our community, so I feel like that's why it's important for those of us who know to chant the verse.
Absolutely. If this year I had been planning, I didn't ever announce it, I had been planning to read it on the conference call, but that was when I got sick with that infection. So I wasn't able to do it. But Bezrat Hashem, next year Hashem will show us mercy. Because
mm-hmm.
the more people...
The dates are always there. You know, so they're always on the handout. I said the dates are always on the handout. You know, so...
Yes. Pasuk 108. Bekat sihara it male bir kan leela kid kayot Yisrael atyan beyan kin mina bil chodaihu beyal da kiti beyom hashmini atzeret tiye Lachem my atzaret, kitar gumo, genisho shu, komadik nishu meinun, pirkan ilain, layankin mineya, amin acharanin. Bar Yisrael bilchodaihu, ugin kach ketiv, atzeretihie, lachem lachem, velalishar, amin lachem, velalishar memanam. When the moon is full of blessings from above, as she ought, Israel come and draw sustenance from her for themselves alone. That is why it is written, on the eighth day you shall have a solemn assembly. The Hebrew word is atzeret. When is this assembly? It indicates the assembling of the blessings from above, from which only Israel may draw sustenance. And that is why it is written, there shall be a solemn assembly for you, referring specifically to you and not to the other nations, to you and not to the other supernal ministers. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Well, it's referring to Shemini Atzeret.
Correct.
I have to say, this year, I remember you, when you taught it, I learned something different than what I've been doing all these many years. So let me just repeat what I remember to clarify for myself anyway, and maybe for the others. Always before for Shemini Atzeret, we knew that Sukkot was really over, okay? But we still went into the sukkah to eat our meals, not necessarily all of them, but to spend time in the sukkah along with Hashem. We didn't shake lulav ve'etrog. We didn't say the blessings for entering the sukkah, that kind of thing. But I thought this year you mentioned that really we shouldn't go into the sukkah, but rather into our homes and invite persons into our homes. Did I understand that correctly?
You understood it. Essentially, yes, you understood it correctly. But I was careful when I explained it to say that there are communities that do not follow that. The Kabbalists are the ones who say, the Zohar says, And the Kabbalists follow that, and the Ari have expressed it in other words, that we should not go into the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. Because the last time you go into the sukkah is at Hoshana Rabbah. And as you leave the sukkah to with the aravot, with the willows and the hitting of the willows, that action is done outside of the sukkah. That is when, as you exit the sukkah with the willows in your hand, that's the last time you should go into the sukkah until the kiddush at lunch of Simchat Torah, because that kiddush is really a forerunner of the, and connecting the to the meal of the tzaddikim of the lavana, what's the big fish?
Leviathan. Leviton.
Leviathan. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So the only time you I'll go into the sukkah after Hoshana Rabbah is the kiddush of second meal of Shmini of Simchat Torah, because it's connecting to the meal of the Leviathan and the coming of Mashiach. But that's the minhag, the custom of the Kabbalists. But other communities have their own customs, and some of them do go into the sukkah and eat. They know it's not the seventh, it's not Sukkot. They don't wave the lulav and so forth, but they do eat in the sukkah.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
So I hope I clarified.
Yes, thank you.
We have a few, we're out of time, but I want to do verse 109 because it's tying to get together the. So verse 109. Be'al da'inun miratzin al hamayim v'mehav lon hulak birkan di'taskun be'yavilayit arvun Levatar Bechet Vavta Israel Kad Yankin Birkan Ilaiv Vial Hahu Yoma Yativ Dabili Vianilo Delait Arav Ocharabachadan. This is the reason why Israel appeases the Holy One, lest be he with water libations upon the altar. This gives the supernal ministers of the nations part of the blessings, so that they are occupied with it and do not meddle with the joy of Israel when they come to draw the blessings from above. And of this day it is written, my beloved is mine and I am his, meaning that there is no stranger interfering with us. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Are they saying that the water libations sort of acts like the scapegoat?
Yes. First off, I want to make sure everybody understands, what are the water libations? You want to answer that, Anna, or you want me to?
Well, I'd rather you. I mean, I know they go to the Pool of Shalom, or Shiloh, forgotten what it's pronounced. And it's a beautiful ceremony, but you go ahead. I usually fill a pitcher of water and have in the sukkah for that reason. Oh, are we out again?
Yeah, I think so.
Uh-oh.
Are we out because it's our time is up, or did he just get cut off?
I think he's been being cut off. It's happening a lot, seemingly, lately.
Sorry about that. The call, I don't know why the call drops like that, but anyway, the Kohanim would take the barrels to the Jordan River, fill the barrels up with water, and then bring that up and wash the altar once a year. And they would clean it every day, but the washing of the blood was only once a year during Sukkot. And that action, Baal HaShueva, the Talmud says that you have never experienced joy in your life till you witnessed the washing of the altar during Sukkot. And it's hard to relate to that until you've actually experienced pouring water from one vessel, one pitcher to another vessel in the sukkah during Sukkot. And it elevates your joy. It's an experience. You have to experience it to know the truth of it. But it is amazing. But that is what the water libation ceremony is. The English is, that's the translation of the Aramaic and the Hebrew. And as Hannah said, what this verse is saying is that the water libations is bringing chesed, which is what water is, to the blood by washing it off the altar. It's bringing it's bringing love and, you know, chesed to the 70 ministers and to the 70 nations. And if not, they would be looking for Israel on that eighth day. But because they receive this over the 7 days, they feel complete, and they leave us alone. They act as it acts as the scapegoat.
I always think of the water libations when I see anyone with a pitcher of water, and I kind of look for it at times. And it makes me happy when I see it.
Baruch Hashem. It's an amazing experience. It really is. There was one year, the year that my sister and I had our discussion about the family business, and that it was no longer able to support both families. And she and I, you know, got into this normal family business issues, and I had walked away from the family business and turned it over to her. And then we went into Sukkot, and I was feeling a low period. I was not, I will honestly say I was somewhat depressed. Not atrociously depressed, but I was very down. And I walked into that ceremony in the sukkah, watched that water go into the other pitcher, and my depression just disappeared. It was just an amazing experience. So I highly recommend it to do in your own sukkah, And I highly recommend it if you can to do it with your community. So we're out of time. So we'll pick this up tomorrow at 4:30. Tonight is questions and answers at 7 p.m. West Coast time. And tomorrow night is the Zohar class for the Parasha of Chaye Sarah. So shalom to all.
Shalom.
Shalom. Thank you, too.
Shalom and thank you.